Finally, we approach the formula for Mountain Dew.
Well, it's changed colors.
It is Mountain Done.
Welcome to the Commentary Track, a Kamen Rider podcast. I'm your host, Jared.
I'm Cody.
And I'm producer, Jed.
Welcome back, gentlemen.
Here we are, another week.
We have any revolutionary things happen this week?
Much like last week, just continue rearranging the house.
I finished Kamen Rider Kabuto.
Oh.
Kabuto.
How was that?
And how many years will it take for us to get there?
6, I think. Did it get better than those few episodes we watched a few years ago?
Is there a Kamen Rider series bad enough that we're skipping it?
We are contractually obligated to not do that.
Okay, in the trenches we stay.
Guess maybe you could say that we skipped all of the Showa, but it's more theming, not because they're bad.
There is no season I have seen that I think is all bad.
I spent all week playing Ark Survival Ascended. It's Pokemon, but it's dinosaurs.
Okay, I was like, the name sounds familiar, but I couldn't think of it.
Yeah, you go out in the wilderness, pop a raptor in the ass with a tranquilizer dart, and while it's asleep, you give it a bunch of rare prime meat from other dinosaurs, and then it thinks you're its best friend. It follows you around and fights for you.
Fun.
Yeah. So we started a server with a bunch of people, and I've lost entirely too much sleep over playing dinosaur Pokemon. It's been spectacular.
Okay. And it has been so long since I've been able to play video games.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know. Spending time with family.
I don't follow.
No, you wouldn't.
Do they not do the video games?
Bugs at the point where certain games will hold his attention because they're colorful, but he's also figured out that the controllers I hand him don't work.
Oh, that's a bad place to be in the middle of.
So then he still wants to hold mine, and of course I'm going to give it to him, and at that point, I'm not playing. I'm watching him just do horrible things to the characters on screen.
Spectacular. Yeah, I just caught a giant turtle on the game, one of the Archelons, the giant ones. Which, that's a wonderful transition to this week's episode, because I think we're still fighting some chromatic turtles.
I believe so, because we didn't kill any of them last week.
Ah, we kicked shell.
And it did nothing.
That fight was a shell of a time.
You made that pun already. A week ago.
All right. I'll work on more turtle puns. Keep going.
So yeah, this week we'll be watching episode 4, Puzzle Decoding.
Episode 4 was directed by Naga Ishitakao and originally aired February 18, 2001. It also marks the last mention of ULFS and 04.
Okay.
A jump to the sky turns to a Rider review.
The mysteries that we thought were going to be mysteries are not. And instead, they're giving us new, more ridiculous mysteries as we go.
I love the baseline assumption that there is clearly something completely ethereal ephemeral going on because he found a quarter in a jar. And it takes the professor walking him through how practical magic works for him to be like, oh, okay.
Except we find out at the end it wasn't just street magic.
Hey, they don't know that.
It's true, and they never will. Shall we jump into it?
Yes.
So we start back with the fight between Agito, Terestis, and Oceanus. And eventually they just get tired and leave.
That kick sending Oceanus arcing into Terestis was pretty cool.
Was, yes. Also, hiding behind a tree watching this entire thing is Mana. And I think we might have not mentioned last week. I don't remember if we did or did not. She saw Soichi Henshin into Agito. Is now just watching this whole fight. Eventually, the turtles are just like, bye. And dig back into the dirt. Soichi de-henshins.
De-henshins.
Demorphs. I like demorphs better.
Reverts?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
And Mana sees this, and you're probably thinking, okay, she's going to leave, and it's going to be a thing for the rest of the season that she knows, but he doesn't know that she knows. No, he sees her.
Yep, immediately.
And she's uncertain how to handle things, and leaves. And because she clearly has the mutant superpower to be able to bike super fast and super steady. You were getting so much use out of that soundbite.
It's doing some heavy lifting this season.
Shoichi just stands there and menacingly stares at her.
I'm noticing another theme going through this series, and that's people not knowing what to say and just fucking off entirely. Like, already, there are two in this episode where somebody... I got one. Ladies and gentlemen, I got one. Yeah, two times in this episode in particular, there are people who don't have a response to the questions either said or unspoken, and they just leave immediately.
You know, all they would need to do is make up, like, the Scott Pilgrim excuse of, I gotta pee.
Bathroom.
We get the opening credits. From there, we cut to the Misugi residence, and Mana runs upstairs into her room and dives onto her bed.
She's got so many emotions right now.
Yes. Back at the park, Hikawa has now shown up, and he pulls a hat out of the dirt.
Wizard.
We jump forward in time a little bit. The site of the hat has now been excavated. They have retrieved the full body of our poor, dearly departed...
That guy.
Yeah. And fucking Hojo and Kano are here.
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
Start referring to him as fucking Hojo.
And fucking Hojo tells Kano to set up a security detail for the victim's family, because as they've seen, the lords seem to be targeting specific family lines.
Yeah, that's a detail of this that's made me pretty curious. In Kuga, they were just going for kill counts under specific conditions. These are hunting bloodlines? Or families in particular?
Yeah, and going after specific families and the hand gesture, this is a very, very ritualized thing.
We have so many things to consider.
And this is the one decent thing Hojo does in this episode, is at least task Kano with doing a good security...
A decent police job.
And then Hojo walks over and starts talking to Hikawa and is like, you know, if you hadn't destroyed the G3 armor, maybe you could have been here and kept this person from dying.
I remember thinking, I'm about to beat this bitch up.
You know, if you weren't such a huge dick, you would have been the one piloting it.
And I think this is a good time to go ahead and go into this week's Tropusatsu.
Ooh, ah.
Hate sync.
Mm.
Typically in a show, you'll get good, the bad, maybe even the ugly. Then there's fucking Hojo. A hate sync is a character who is created for the express purpose of being disliked by the audience. Remember when I said it's like they were doing it on purpose?
What?
They in fact are. This is particularly common in works with sympathetic villains or even faceless villains, such as natural disasters or killer animals. The lords certainly seem to fall into that category. Their ways and means are unknowable, so we can't really form any sort of strong emotional feelings one way or the other towards them. They're just doing a thing. But fucking Hojo.
His eyebrows enrage me.
They do. The distinction between hate sync and a similar trope, love to hate, can often be the case of your mileage may vary.
Hmm.
You know, some people might view him as a hate sync. Some people might love him because they hate him. Write in with which camp you fall into. Just know I might be judging you if you love to hate him.
I don't think I have seen anyone who love hates Hojo.
Oh, thank God.
Trying to think of other examples from media. The first one that comes to mind is honestly Adam from Has-Been Hotel. There are a lot of characters in that show that have ambiguous morality or are only good because of their orientation to other characters or because who they're protecting at the time. So having one person in the show who's just a massive dick out the gate gives the audience some sort of orientation. Like, it gives them which way is down, so to speak.
Fun fact about this trope. The other characters don't have to feel the same way as the audience. They can be perfectly cool with it, but the behavior has to be designed to piss us off. If you've been following along, and if you're listening to this episode, surely you have been. If not, welcome to the commentary track. You picked an interesting moment to jump in. But if you've been listening, you remember our hatred was pretty solidified by episode 2. And by episode 3, we've got...
Oh, hi. Thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
Yeah, we've soundboarded this character.
It's our own sound cue for just how awful he is.
Do you know how much we have to hate a character or how stupid I have to act for it to cue Jetty to make a new soundbite?
Yes.
All my friends are toxic.
That's a new one right there.
Was that for me? I'm so proud. I'm so honored.
Hikawa, being, I guess, kind of an idiot, doesn't realize what Hojo's doing and takes him real serious.
You're absolutely right. I should internalize this and agonize over it for weeks.
Let's not think about how many times you put in there that, oh, you should be the one piloting G3, not me. Nah, you're right. I am bad at this job. Fucking Hojo.
In his defense, not Hojo's, never Hojo's, but like the royal he here, like G3 hasn't won a fight yet.
That's very true.
Like,
and you know, that maybe could be chalked up to Hikawa. It could also be chalked up to the fact that, you know, from what they tell us, the lords are stronger than the ULFs.
Mm-hmm.
And the weapons and armor were designed to fight one threat, and here's one that is more.
Yeah, the pimp slap from that turtle looked like it had some wallop to it. I do love that archetype of the super soldier or technology that's meant to fight one threat, and then another worse threat that's unrelated emerges. This isn't what we meant this for, but thank God we had something.
Yeah. We cut to the G3 trailer, and Hikawa is relating everything that fucking Hojo said to him, and no-nonsense Ozawa's like, don't listen to him.
She's got a point. She's an icon. She's a legend. And she is the moment.
She told him last episode, dude, don't listen to him.
And she once again, she's like, I told you not to listen to him. Don't listen to him. Yes, the armor is damaged. We're working on fixing it. We'll get you back in the field as quick as we can. Just God, get your head on straight. Also, you're going to go see the professor tomorrow.
Okay.
From there, we cut to OO parts, and Hikawa is checking in on what Mikomo has been doing, and this whole scene has very unhinged energy to it.
Oh God, yes. She's got big mad scientist vibes.
She's showing off the statuary that has risen out of the Tetris block and comments that it looks like DNA, but is many, many thousands of years too old to possibly be that.
Bum, bum, bum.
Specifically 30,000 years. Which is, in fact, many, many thousand. And Hikawa, being very reasonable, is like, well, that doesn't make any sense. How could this possibly be? And this is when she goes on the really unhinged monologue about, like, abandoning all understanding and embracing the impossible to move forward.
Yeah, big Evangelion vibes here.
Honestly, it almost started to slip into word salad horror, which would have been a real fun trope to have done, but I'm sure we'll get another opportunity at some point.
Your tiny mind cannot ponder the tropesatsus I have for you.
And after this full unhinged rant, he just looks at her and goes, so do you think magic exists? Which honestly seemed like a fair question based off of what she was ranting about. And she kind of snaps back to reality for a moment and goes, you know, I don't know.
Thank you for grounding her before she went completely off the deep end.
Don't forget she starts talking about a new experiment.
Oh yeah, they're trying to recreate the DNA based off the model of the statues and adding RNA to it to try and create new life.
Hey, stop it!
Yeah, this is never going to go poorly.
No.
Perfect.
How could it possibly?
Jurassic Park was only a mistake if you're one of the tourists that got eaten. Otherwise, dinosaurs, great idea.
Yeah. We cut to the Misugi residence so that we don't have time to truly unwrap that monologue or the implications of the upcoming experiment. And
instead,
Taichi,
we have to learn about magic.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Because this was Taichi. Taichi bursts into Mana's room, says that Shoichi is gone.
Oh, right.
They run in there along with the professor, and there is a letter. It is not a resignation note.
Boo.
It just says, thank you so much, Shuichi. And the professor looks at it and goes, well, what does this mean? What do you mean? What does it mean? The words are very clear.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you for my indentured servitude. I am leaving.
That was for his two smaller landlords. It means they now have to find a new indentured servant.
We then cut outside an apartment, and the coach has shown up and is pounding on the door furiously, demanding that Rio open up and face him. And finally, the door opens a bit. The coach is like, "How dare you just leave like that?
You can't do this to me."
And not just there. You left the hospital. You left the swim team. What's going on? And Rio ominously is like, "All right, coach, for you, I'll show you everything."
Oh, dude, he's flirting.
And the coach comes inside and the door shuts and we get a close up on the slide lock. And then we get like a from the ground moving up and twisting shot of the doorknob and a filter comes over it and all the color gets washed out. And why did they go through such ominous lengths for this doorknob?
Yeah, it's pretty intense.
It's a lot of VFX for this shot.
Like, even if he's telling him all about like the being a hero that can transform and the monsters and everything, this even felt overdramatic for that conversation.
Also, that phrasing is just suggestive.
Yeah. Back at the Misugi residence, Mana walks outside and finds Shoichi tending the garden. She's like, "Oh, I thought you were going to make your big, flashy, grand escape."
"I can't acquit you."
And Shoichi's like, "I forgot to ask you to take care of the plants before I leave." He hangs his head, and Mana's like, "Absolutely not. I'm not taking care of these plants. You planted them. You're gonna take care of them." And Shoichi seems to accept this.
Yeah, I don't like how he's being positioned in relation to this family. They might own him.
It really feels like they do. But before we give producer Jen an aneurysm, we'll continue on. They then have a conversation where Mana apologizes for running away, but now sees that he is a hero, and that talk they had the previous day about him having a place to defend, well, that seems like that should be here.
Congratulations, you're promoted from indentured servant to bodyguard and indentured servant. There's no pay rise.
No, why would there be? If anything, you owe us more money.
Yes.
This seems, as much as we're joking about the slavery thing, it does seem to make him feel a bit better.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, Hikawa shows up. Because remember, he's meeting with the professor. And Mana's like, "All right, back to work. Go make tea for our guest." And that one's not an exaggeration.
Nope.
So we then cut inside, and Hikawa gives the professor the bottle. And as they're talking, Shoichi comes up with drinks. And it's puns in Japanese, or homonyms in Japanese.
I think this one is similar to saying to drink a dainty lee.
Took me a moment to register what the text-to-speech meant.
Yes.
Yeah, it's similar to that.
Dainty lee?
Yes. And it causes Hikawa to become offended, and Mana has to be like, "No, here's what he actually said. He just overemphasized this part, and that's why you took it this way." And the professor's like, "Can you just fucking leave?"
Embarrass me in front of the police.
So from there, we cut to a river, and there's a family setting up a wind-up airplane, and they throw it, and it unfortunately lands in the water. And just before they can go get it, turtle monster.
A tale as old as time, truly.
Truly.
Tale as old as time.
That sounds like something our parents would have warned us about as young millennials, like, don't play with your RC2 planes too close to the river, or a giant turtle will eat it. Same as, like, don't go swimming until 30 minutes after you eat and other stupid stuff I learned. Yeah. It's not true.
But this isn't just some tall tale. This is fictional reality. Mm-hmm. And the turtle monster eats the plane and then starts chasing after the family.
More planes.
Terestis chases down the family. The mom trips. Turtle grabs mom. We cut away. Back to the Misugi residence, where Hikawa is asking about the bottle in the photo. And the professor's like, "Well, the photo is just doctored. That's simple enough. And as for the bottle, watch this." And he does some sleight of hand magic and puts another coin in the bottle.
The fact that he just had that sleight of hand fake quarter with the folding face on him
he
at the time.
He had two of them. Because he puts one in the bottle and then pulls out another one and is like, "Here's how it works. Thanks, masked magician."
I want to know what else are in his pocket.
No,
he's
you
ready
don't.
For any situation and I need to know.
And Hikawa's like, "Oh, well, I guess I was stupid for thinking it was magic." And the professor's like, "Yes, you were.
You're making things up again."
But he gets a phone call, and it's Ozawa saying that there's been another unknown sighting. And Nicole's like, is the G3 armor ready yet? And she says, no, it's not ready yet. And he pouts.
So it's not time to move to that scene yet.
Nope. Instead, we cut to Oh parts, and Makumo is checking in on her team as one guy is swirling around some darkish green-colored liquid, and it changes into a more fluorescent Mountain Dew-esque color green. And she asks how it's going, and he gives an answer, but the science doesn't make any sense.
No.
We then cut to the river, and Hikawa is there, and fucking Hojo.
Fuck it be his name.
Fuck it be. Is like, well, you know what? You're lucky things worked out this way. You don't need to protect a family. Hikawa's like, I don't know what you mean by that, and I feel like this is a trap I'm about to walk into, but please explain, what do you mean? Fucking Hojo says, because guess what? The monster killed the entire family, not just one person this time.
Oh, hi, thanks for checking in. I'm still a piece of garbage.
And once again, we get a shot of, like, the dug-up gravesite, and there's flowers.
Third time we've seen flowers yes. there. So it's either the police or the turtles are leaving them.
I like the idea that the turtles are leaving flowers, but I cannot fathom a reason why.
It's what the shells are for. She's got a bunch of flowers back there.
So we then cut back to the Misugi residence. Hikawa has come back, and the professor is still talking with him more about, hey, like, there's a rational and practical explanation for all of this stuff. Magic isn't real. And Shuichi comes out again and is like, hey, do you like daikon radish? Hikawa says, well, I don't hate it.
Good, here's a whole bowl of it.
And yes, Shoichi's like, here's a bowl of radish. Please eat some.
Would you like this side dish? It's also radish.
Hikawa tries some and says that it's good. And Shoichi's like, awesome. So here I made this that's also radish. And this is radish. And this is spinach. And
this is also spinach.
But with pickled plums, Jean would be so proud. And Hikawa's like, I'm very uncomfortable right now. Please take this away from me.
You got to move slow with new boyfriend. New boyfriend spook pretty easy.
Is it boyfriend?
I don't know. I was getting some slight, there's some flirtatious energy in the room.
Is there, or is it the idea of giving food to another person has some interesting romantic connotations with it?
Potentially both.
I guess we'll find out as the series goes along.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe this is me in denial, not ready to jump into new boyfriend. We cut to a playground and a kid's going up a slide. And Terestis is hiding behind a tree, staring creepily at the child. Much in the similar way to fucking Hojo and Kano from a couple episodes, only he's a turtle monster and not wearing a trench coat.
Yep, so this kind of makes more sense.
And a cop rides by on a bicycle and notices turtle monster, small child.
You know, it's rare that you get to see these kind of like attacks or monster action scenes from like a third party's perspective, but he's just watching this turtle man slowly wander up behind this child in real time. I thought it was fun.
It was quite humorous, and he does the noble thing and immediately jumps in and grabs the child and tries to protect it from turtle monster. We cut back to the residence. Hikawa and the professor have gone outside and they're going to smash the bottle with a hammer to prove that it's a trick coin inside. And right as they're about to, another phone call. The unknown has been sighted. Is the G3 armor fixed? Yes, it is fixed this time.
And oh good, we can go to that scene now.
And while it doesn't look like it, it has been upgraded.
Oh.
They do mention that there were some upgrades, but they make a point to state that there's no visually distinct difference for the upgraded version.
I appreciate them addressing it that way. Like, even in a lazy way, just tell me there's no visual difference, but there have been upgrades, and I'm cool with it.
Yeah, it's good, and I'm sure the costume department thanks them for it.
So we never see the bottle get smashed?
Not yet, no.
Which means this experiment, tortoise nothing?
Ayo!
I'm so proud of you. I hate it.
It took a minute.
Mana, meanwhile, because she has been there watching but not saying anything, as Hikawa leaves, is like, oh, wait. Shoichi, he better not have left the dishes running in the sink. And she runs into the kitchen, and the water is pouring on a colander, splashing everywhere. He left the dishes in the sink.
Freaking.
We then cut to Shoichi riding on his motorcycle, and we get our first motorcycle Henshin. And not only does he transform, but the bike transforms.
Agito's rider machine. The machine Tornado Door can reach speeds of 430 kilometers per hour, or 267 miles per hour.
That's pretty fast.
Pretty quick. Its name's the Tornado.
Tornado?
That's a Pokemon.
Yes, Tornadus's pre-evolution. So at the park, Terestus is chasing after the cop and child, and he goes in for the kill. It's blocked. Kamen Rider G3 is there.
Ba-dum.
And he tries to fight. He at least tells the cop and kid to run. He takes some hits, and then also, surprise, Oceanus is there now. And once again, it is two tortoises on one cop.
Ayo!
Two tortoise, one cop?
Yeah. Like awkward silence. Some more fighting continues. Oceanus decides to try and go after the kid again. Only this time, Agato's there. And motorcycle rams his way through G3 and Terestus to hit Oceanus.
Yeah, we got our first bike foo coming in.
It's not our first bike foo, but we haven't had some the last couple episodes.
Eh, true. This one was exciting. It felt good.
This gives G3 just enough time to go back to his bike and once again pull out its Scorpion and Salamander to combine into the grenade launcher mode.
He pulls out his Nerf gun and attaches an underslung grenade launcher to it.
And looks at Terestus and says, parry this.
How about the jump where Terestus used Oceanus as a springboard?
That was fun. Yeah, we did a
kickflip off the other turtle's back.
That was awesome. A fun moment.
I'm just honestly happy that we've established a baseline where some of the technology G3 has can actually take out Unknown. Right? It was going to feel really bad if this was like the fifth Unknown it had encountered and had yet to beat one. I'm happy that the underslung grenade launcher actually manages to do the job.
Well, what I find fascinating is that in Kuga, we got the explanation war crimes came from autopsying the remains of dead Gurungi. We have gotten no such thing. It's just, we made it stronger.
Yeah, no. We're not doing science. We are saved by the benefits of superior ordnance. With a big enough boom, it goes away.
It's true. He fires the grenade launcher, and at first it looks like it's not going to do anything, when all of a sudden the halo appears above Terestus' head, and he explodes. And
Terestus even looks surprised. Like, he got shot in the chest with the grenade launcher, kind of like swept himself off, goes to pick up. The halo appears over his head, and he looks up at it. He's like, wait, what?
To be fair, he always looks surprised.
He does, but I think he was just a little insulted to be taken out by, like, dollar store Iron Man over here.
I feel like even though you couldn't see him, even Ikawa inside G3 was surprised that this worked. Well, you know, I hoped, but I didn't dare dream.
I guess I have to bring more ammunition for this in the future.
And on successful kill, Ozawa's like, hey, there's still one other idiot. Go deal with Oceanus now.
I would have just thrown him at it. Be like, you know what? You go deal with it. Yeet.
Oceanus somehow has ended up inside an abandoned factory that's right next to this park.
Very close, those two districts.
Yes. And Agito once again strikes his stance. Horn fins out.
Clicks his heels. No place like home.
Does his rider kick. And we get a really great shot of Oceanus's shell breaking.
That was a good detail.
It reminded me of the lines to the belt.
Yes.
From Gurungi Deaths. It felt like home to see cracks forming down the body of our monster.
Yeah, you crumble apart, you piece of shit.
Halo appears once again, goes out, Oceanus explodes. Two dead turtles.
Yeah. It's enough to make soup.
G3 shows up afterwards with the grenade launcher. I'm guessing he reloaded, or maybe it has a capacity larger than one now.
Nope.
Who can say?
Nope. Fake it. He's bluffing.
I think he is too. But he looks at Agito and is like, hey, are you an enemy or an ally? And Agito just rolls his eyes and walks away. Obviously, the eye roll doesn't happen, although that'd be so cool to see, like, the LEDs
on the helmet. They just cycle in a circle once, yeah.
Yeah. Outside, Mitsugi residence, Taichi walks up and sees the bottle with the coin in there and is like, oh, sweet, money, and picks up the hammer and smashes the bottle. And we see that it wasn't a trick coin. It was, in fact, a genuine, solid 100 yen piece. And he walks away. No one will ever know.
Nope. It will remain unproven.
And for one final time for this episode, we cut back to O parts, and Makuma walks into the lab, and there's an ominous light and smoke. And inside the facility where all of the other assistants are, they're gone. Things are kind of in smoking ruin, and inside the capsule where the vial of Mountain Dew-esque colored liquid had been is like a 3-month-old child.
What the fuck?
And it has some sort of birthmark tattoo on its hand.
We've made a bioweapon.
I think so.
I think I missed that sex ed class, because that's not how I remember it being explained to me.
No, but that does feel like something that happened in Evangelion.
This feels like Kuga that's shifted halfway towards Evangelion.
This episode in particular has been a ride.
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and propose menacing doorknobs for our rating this week.
Ooh, it was that or like mysterious babies.
Immaculate conceptions.
I am outvoted. Okay, immaculate menacing babies.
Unexpected immaculate menacing babies.
How many words can we force producer Jed to have to add to his rating?
It's more punishment for us. He can copy paste.
He still has to type it out the first time.
That's fair.
We are again suffering the palette swap issue. Even worse, as each is a singular color, as opposed to the Jaguar's patterns. However, at least Oceanus has flippers to differentiate them more. Their expressions do give them some charm, which is the only reason they get a 3.
I'll go next. I'm going to give the Turtle Team 2. It's like you said, the palette swap was pretty unoriginal, just like kind of a 1-to-1. We didn't have nearly as appropriate a method of like body or corpse disposal as the kitty cats. That one made perfect sense. The closest thing I can think is like sea turtles burying their eggs, but one's supposed to be a terrestrial tortoise. So it's not really, yeah. I didn't realize that turtles were famous for burying their kills. So I guess that's on me, but yeah. Uninspired.
With the Pantheris, they had different colored scarves. The fur was designed to be different colors. Sure, the sculpt was the same, but they felt more individual. Also, yeah, the weird monochrome of all copper and all silver, except for that one moment where I guess Terestis turned gold, at least in the light.
Super Saiyan.
It doesn't feel like there's much to them. We saw that the Pantheris had weapons as well. They don't seem to. They do feel like a step down in quality, so I think a 2.
Yeah.
That brings them to a 2.333 repeating, of course. Immaculate menacing babies.
IMBs, yes.
It is the Monster Mash. The Monster
Mash. Terrestris doesn't have the flippers, so that's a plus. The constant state of confusion certainly gives him lovable himbo vibes. Mash.
Okay.
Yeah, sure, can go with that.
Hard to blow somebody's back out if it's encased in a shell.
God.
You drag me down to this comedic level. I'll play in the mud. Episode time?
Yes, episode time.
The fights in this episode are really good, and we get some much-needed forward movement with the puzzle box being decoded. I really enjoy this one, so a 4.
Yeah, as much as I didn't enjoy them as villains, we had a lot of really cool plot developments this episode, so I'm going to go with a 4 as well.
The scenes at O parts and the madness that came with it were certainly very intriguing. The fight choreography was spectacular. We haven't really seen a bad fight.
No.
And maybe it's because it's the first time we've seen it. Grenade launcher parry this feels slightly more engaging than It's Nerf or Nothing Baby from last season. I think it's because the impact feels like it has more weight to it.
Yes.
I hated every scene fucking Hojo was in. I think for me, it's a 3.5. So that gives us overall a 3.8333 repeating IMBs.
It feels fair. I'm very excited to see where the story goes with Ryo. Like, he seems interesting. Baby. Why is there a baby? Why is there a human baby out of a tube of goo from Nickelodeon?
Is it human?
Human adjacent baby.
Who knows? And I don't want to get my hopes up, because once again, this feels like a, surely this will be a mystery that lasts the entire season, but maybe next episode will clear it all up.
No, it's another smaller Hojo.
Fucking baby Hojo. Oh Ho Jr.
Ho Jr.
But I guess we'll see what happens next week. The title of the episode at least kind of gives us hope. Join us next week for episode 5, The Third Warrior.
I was hoping you were going to say episode 5, We've Removed Hojo.
If only.
You can reach us by email at commentarytrack@gmail.com or on Twitter at commentarytrack. You can support us at patreon.com/thecommentarytrack. You can get access to our exclusive Discord server, running commentary on every episode, and bi-monthly-ish bonus episodes.
It's a steel type.
What a weird transition to go from a steel type to a mono flying.
It hatched.